now plugged into Action Features.
Okay. Man, deja vu.
Deja vu. I've got the TV remote and you've got the DVD player.
It feels like we just did this,
We did just do it.
Oh, it messed up, didn't it?
The computer messed up.
It wasn't deja vu.
Nope.
All right, well, it's going to feel kind of like deja vu to the listeners. Because this is the 1989 Keaton Batman discussion part two. We continue it from the first episode.
Action Features returns.
So part two, we're gonna finish up our discussion of the 1989 Batman and lead into our Batman Returns discussion. We're gonna cut out all the whole current happenings, catch you up on stuff. It's only been a week.
I'm not gonna talk about my Tabe story that I remember.
Don't talk about that.
I'm not gonna talk about that today.
And save it for 2 weeks.
Next time you can have it.
We'll have another episode in 2 weeks. Give him something else then.
That's right.
All right, so I was really happy with the first episode. That was probably my favorite episode that we've recorded.
Of all times?
Of all times.
Wow.
From here on out, it's going to be my favorite.
Wow.
Yeah, I can tell. It's going to be the best I've ever experienced when it comes to podcasting.
Yep.
So I really thoroughly enjoyed it, so I was glad to hear that you wanted to do that this week instead of next week.
Why the heck not?
The two-part. Let's get it rolling. Let's not forget anything.
Speaking of rolling, I got this strawberry roll.
That's from my mom's.
That's from your mom?
My mom sent that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bless her. God
thanks,
bless
mom.
Her.
I would say thanks, Mom, out on the air, but I don't think she listens anymore. I think she got...
Nah, she's...
Like most people.
She's over it.
Like most people, it lost
she,
its
when she realized we really aren't... Yeah. This is not like a famous thing. We don't have people...
She was asking people at the grocery store, like, have you heard my son on the Action Features with his friend Mike?
No response.
What's Action Features? Oh.
She gave up.
Who knows about this Action Features?
She gave up?
I don't even bother with it anymore.
I don't blame her.
But she sent that strawberry roll in there, so enjoy that. She also sent the fancy cakes.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm only going to have one.
Well, do what you got to do, man.
Okay.
Okay, so... Let's start with... There were a few questions that people posted on the Facebook page. Our Action Features podcast Facebook page. Which is facebook.com/actionfeatures.
.org.
First up, Paul Gibson asked what our thoughts were on the music. Both the Danny Elfman score and the Prince music in his concept album that was tied to the film.
Hmm.
What do you think?
Well, I love Danny Elfman's score. And I think he's gotten to be a little played. Like, and if I hear a new Danny Elfman score, I'm kind of like, okay, I see what you're doing. I've heard it. But for Batman, he got darker. Like, it had some of the playfulness to it that some of the... But it was like, really... I mean, who could beat the theme song too?
That march is great.
Yeah, it's great. When
Tim Burton brought him in, and they were telling the producers about it because he was a big Oingo Boingo fan. Mm-hmm. I think Tim Burton was, and they played some of the music, and the kind of the producers were kind of like, I don't know what this means. And then he said, play the march, and they played the march, and it was like, okay, well that
makes sense.
Brings it all together. The march, it still gives me chills, especially like the last sequence where, and the finale music where Batman's standing there on the thing and the bat signal shining, and the music's like boom, boom. It's so good, man. It's very moving, that music, and it's perfect for Batman. As much as the John Williams soundtrack is perfect for Superman, this is perfect for Batman.
Yeah, I agree. As far as Prince goes, as a kid, I thought nothing of it really. It's a bizarre pick. I don't know what led to that. I don't know. I mean, Prince was hot at the time, of course, but it's a big deal for an artist to do a full concept album, really. It was a full album, right?
He did a full album.
Based on a movie, so that's very interesting. I don't know. I don't know why it was him, but I don't mind it.
I think he was a Warner musician, and Warner wanted to do something with him, and I think he wanted to do something with Batman.
I could see him
It wasn't like a Tim Burton decision.
Right, okay.
It was Warner's decision.
I could see Prince wanting to do it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see Tim Burton like going and seeking Prince out.
Yeah, I don't think that was it at all.
But
Tim Burton was okay with it. And it works for Joker, I think.
That's the whole angle right there, is the Joker angle. Prince works. And, you know, he's got that song at the end, the real slow one.
It works too, I think.
That's a cool song.
It really is.
I like that song.
You know, when I was younger, it was all about the Danny Elfman score for me.
Mm-hmm.
The scene's great. I want to talk about this scene.
Pause this now.
Pause that
we're not.
Okay.
We're playing Returns right now.
Okay, so let's pause that so we don't miss out on that. Okay, so as a kid, I had the score, and I didn't have the Prince album, but I did have, like, I think I taped off VHS, like, the Bat Dance and something else. It may have been the I can't remember. But I taped a couple of the videos off mm-hmm. of VH1 or whatever was playing them. But I never had the album because I was just like, you know what, it's cool as the Joker music, but I'm not a big Prince fan, so I don't really think I need that. But as I've gotten older and I had the Prince album, I listened to it a lot, and it's got some really catchy music on there. And I like that he mixes in like Joker lines into the songs yeah. and things like that. And the one you're talking about too, the place at the end is a very good song. That's great. Yeah.
Come
yeah.
closer.
Yeah, you know
what I'm saying?
That's the one.
That's
about.
How he does it.
Yeah. So yeah, I like them both. And I like the fact that the Danny Elfman theme is kind of unique and sticks to the two Burton films. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's that Batman gets that theme, and I'm glad it wasn't kind of repeated so much later on. Just as
it
I
wasn't,
think that,
but all the music I think was reminiscent. It was hard to not be influenced by that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Batman Animated Series is a spinoff of that.
Oh,
obviously.
Yeah, definitely.
What I'm saying is that it's kind of unique to that. It wasn't like a flat out copy
mm-hmm.
for like Forever and Batman and Robin, and then it was not a a flat out copy for the Bale movies and things like that. It's just, it just as I think that the Superman theme belongs to the Christopher Reeve movies and shouldn't be repeated in these other movies, because once you hear that theme, it immediately brings those images to your head. And so if you're not watching those images, those two things are disconnected. If you're listening to that theme, you think of the Michael Keaton Batman. Mm-hmm. And if you're listening to the Superman theme, you think of the Christopher Reeve Superman. So it would be kind of a disservice to attach that to somebody else, because immediately you're going to be comparing them in your head. You know, and that's the sign of a good theme, too, is that it's so identified and connected to that.
Agreed.
You know, you can remember it. It's in your head. A lot of the current... You got a little bit of... A little
strawberry cream. Icing? A strawberry cream?
They could have seen that at home had I not warned.
Yeah, you saved me.
A lot of the current comic films, I think they have good themes.
Mm-hmm.
They're nowhere near as indelible, I guess.
It's getting
like
harder to
ingrained
be
ingrained in your mind.
It's getting harder to be unique with music.
I agree.
With film too, but with music definitely, it's harder to make a make an impact.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that was that question.
Next one.
Chris Vent asked if the Keaton Batman was the pinnacle of the Batman movies series for us. And I think that's 100% yes.
Easily, yeah.
It's 100% the tops. I don't think anything compares to Keaton Batman. And we kind of discussed that a little bit, how we feel about Bale Batman. And, you know, I don't think that George Clooney would be a bad Batman.
Right.
I think he was stuck in a really bad movie.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he could have done...
Yeah.
I think he could have done a good job.
And looking at Val Kilmer in, you know, Tombstone as Doc Holliday... I think he could have done a good job.
His,
he was sort of stuck in a bad.
That's his best role.
I agree.
I didn't like him as Batman.
I don't either.
But
I don't think he could be. I don't think he's a horrible Batman.
No, I don't think he did a terrible job.
I think he's would be an okay Batman, but stuck in a really bad movie too. Not nearly as bad as Batman.
Tell me, Doctor Meridian, do you like the circus?
Do you like the circus? So I would say that's a yes for both of us.
Yeah.
Although, if you throw Batman: Mask of the Phantasm in there, that one's.
That's a great movie.
That's high up there, too, but it's not a live-action Batman, so you can't really
Keaton is...
Keaton's still the tops. Did we lose faith in the Batman series after Batman and Robin? And I would assume that what Chris is meaning here is that did we think it was kind of over after Batman and Robin? No more Batman movies. And I think that would be a fair assumption after you watch that film to think that, you know what, if there aren't going to be more Batman... Or if there are going to be more... I don't even want to see them after this. If they're going to be the same vein as this, I'd rather there not be any more than them be like this.
I wasn't even thinking about it. You know, I didn't even see that movie in the theater. And I didn't see it for years after it came out, even though, like, in its entirety.
Yeah.
I don't think I've still sat and watched the entire thing all the way through. We've played it a lot in the store and stuff, but...
It's rough. It's so rough.
So, from beginning to end, I don't think I've seen it all the way through, but...
Oh! I left off something from Paul Gibson.
That was awful.
Paul Gibson asks what we would have thought... about Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face. Because obviously Billy Dee Williams plays Harvey Dent in Day 9 Batman. And his thought was he was going to eventually be Two-Face.
That was part of his reason for taking the role in the beginning. He was excited about that.
Yeah.
You know what? I think Billy Dee could have done a pretty good job with it. What's his face that was in Dark Knight?
Aaron Eckhart.
Aaron Eckhart did a great job with it. Of course, that's a different... Every character, different franchise. You know, I think Tommy Lee wasn't a terrible pick, but once again, the movie was just...
Tommy Lee's a great actor.
Yeah.
But he was trapped in a character that was basically just a Joker ripoff. There was nothing about him that was Two-Face. You know? I think that he could have pulled off, you know, the speaking of Bill O'Dea, he could definitely pulled off the split personality.
The origin story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him.
And he was a very, like, a suave look and a debonair type.
Yeah.
He could pull that side of Harvey off. And I think he's a good enough actor that he could pull off the dark side, too. And I think he would have done a good job, and I would have loved to have seen Burton's take on Two-Face.
I would like to, you know, I would have liked to see Billy Dee be able to have that outlet to kind of go over the top a little bit, or to maybe he would play it the other way and just dip into some darkness.
Like the Two-Face.
Every time you dip into that hat and cloak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the cartoon is more like a drawn back darkness, like a cool, calm, collected darkness. Whereas like the Batman Forever Two-Face is over the top.
Yeah.
Jokery nonsense. Now in Batman Returns, which I mean, we're talking about Batman Returns here. The Max Schreck character was originally the Harvey Dent character. That was that character in the film. Which makes more sense with the whole political aspirations and stuff like that of the plot, for it to be a Harvey Dent character. And then at the end, the electrocution would have been the thing that scarred him.
Oh.
It turned him into Two-Face. But that character was then changed into Max Schreck and more of an evil character throughout. And
interesting.
A mogul type character. And I really don't know what facilitated that change.
Well,
I mean,
that happened. They had the two other villains, which at the time was a lot. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
But
let's finish up these questions real quick. Thanks again to everybody that sent these questions.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Yeah, very
nice. Eric Wade Meador asked if we had an idea of who he wanted as Batman before he found out that Keaton was going to be Batman.
I had no idea.
You were younger than
I was younger. I had no idea.
I agree. I didn't really have something in mind because I mean, I was still young. I was like 10 years old when this whole thing was building up. I was around 11 when the movie came out. I didn't have anything in my head that said, this is the guy I absolutely want to be Batman, because it was so tough to think of somebody being Batman.
Right.
For the same reasons that they had a tough time casting it, it was tough to say, this guy would be a perfect Batman, because anything you said, it was like, oh, that guy's too buff, or this guy's not a good enough actor, or this, that, and the other thing. He brings up a good one. He said Timothy Dalton at the time was his pick, which we both talked about before the podcast started, and we both thought that, yeah, that would have been a pretty decent pick for Batman.
He's got a good jawline, and I think he likes... I was going to say that when he played Bond, you know, he did... He was a big fan of the Ian Fleming novels, and he wanted the series to get closer to the novels than where the 007 franchise had gotten. So he was definitely into, you know, tapping into more seriousness, and once again, a little bit darker edge, and not such a comedic tone. So I think Timothy Dalton would have... He would have been all over it. I think he would have given it 110%.
I think his look would have been good for Bruce Wayne too.
I don't know how his American accent is. Is he doing one in The Rocketeer? He's very distinguished in The Rocketeer, so I can't remember whether or not he.
It's got like a slight British tilt to it.
Yeah,
but I think it is more Americanized. But it still has a slight.
That's kind of what I thought. So, but
I think he's a good actor too, though, and the look of him, he's not like a super buff, big action hero type guy. So I think it was a good pick. Eric says here too that once he saw Keaton, that's all he wanted was Keaton, and I totally agree with that. That once Keaton was cast and you saw Keaton as Batman, there's nobody else I can even think of at that time period that would have been a good pick for Batman.
Yes.
All right, so that covers everything. I want to cover what we still missed from Batman. Real fast. Where are we at already?
13 minutes.
Oh, we're doing fine.
Fine.
Okay, so there are a few points. I don't know if you had any points you still wanted to touch on from Batman.
Maybe once you say something, I'll think of it. Is that loud to you?
That's a little loud.
Sorry.
That's a little loud.
Sorry.
There's one thing in particular in regards to Vicky in the Batcave, which we talked about before.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that when she's in there, she's asking, I just got to know, are we going to try to love each other? And he's like, I'd like to.
Yeah.
But he's out there right now.
And I gotta go to work. That is such
it's
a
It's so
sweet
awesome.
So cool.
It's so cool, and it shows that, you know what? I like you and stuff, but this is what I have to do.
You're great, but this is...
I'm Batman.
Yes, this is me.
And I have to keep doing this.
I've got a job.
I'm not gonna quit for some girl.
Can't do it.
I promised my parents, my parents' deathbed, or their, you know, the solemn vow after their death, that this is what I have to do. I gotta go fight crime, and I have to... You know, make sure this doesn't happen to anybody else. Batman doesn't quit.
Man's got a job to do.
And I may be, you know, alluding to a certain other Bat franchise where the Batman may or may not have decided to quit. But in this character, you know, there's a girl in his life and he likes her a lot. and he could see that maybe he could have life with her, but at the same time, it's like, you know what? I can't do that. I have to go do this.
It was selfless.
I'd like to try.
It was selfless
yeah.
for him to do that because totally. He's in service.
Exactly. He can't give it up.
No.
And at the end of the movie, we even see that. I think Vicky kind of understands because yep. she looks up and sees he's up there still. Right. He's taking care of Joker, so he's eliminated the thing that started the whole thing, but he's still up there. You know, he's... Right. with the bat signal shining and still bat suit going and stuff. He didn't just take it off and go, okay, Joker's gone. Let's get out of here, Vicky.
Right.
He's like, you know what? I'm gonna go do this now instead of, right. you know, doing this now.
Got to do the thing.
I love that. I love that he doesn't quit.
I'd tell her she could still come over once in a while.
We can still hang out.
Do you want to have dinner?
I'd like to. That's what he says.
That's what he says.
I'd like to.
Well. Yeah, of course you would.
If it doesn't work out, though, I have to keep being Batman.
Of course you'd like to.
Yeah.
I think he knew that he couldn't give her everything that she...
Totally.
You know, needed.
He can't be completely available. And I think that's what he was going to tell her in the first
right.
place.
That's right.
Was that to explain to her, I can't be completely available to you. It's, this is what I have to be.
Right.
You know, I can't not be this.
Alfred.
So I wanted to touch on that.
She is great, isn't she?
Yeah. Why don't you marry her? Okay.
Alfred, why don't you marry her?
A Joker's death.
That's not what I had in mind, sir. Joker's death, okay?
Okay, so Joker dies at the end.
He sure does.
Okay. It's kind of a tough thing to weigh out.
They killed off an arch-villain.
They killed off an arch-villain.
First movie.
Stuff is never final in movies, so there would be ways that you could figure out to bring Joker back. But I understand...
He fell pretty far.
I understand why they did it, too, though. Jack is a big name, and getting him to return for a sequel probably not going to happen. His payday was huge on this movie to begin with.
They didn't know how this movie was going to be.
They had no idea that it was even going to spawn into a sequel.
That's right.
So it was kind of, you know, let's tie up the loose ends at the end. And one of those loose ends had to be Joker dying.
I got to say, if you're going to do it, they did it right.
Yeah. If you got to go.
Go with a smile. He falls, of course, and the epic final battle and everything that happens in the tower is beautifully shot.
Oh, my goodness. So good.
A lot of tension there. They didn't have, like, a full-on... And I'm glad he didn't do, like, martial arts. You know, it wasn't, like, a big thing. Like
he just pretty much got his butt handed to him.
Yeah, Joker can't handle Batman.
Other than the sneaky stuff.
And I love that he tried to punch him and hurt his hand anyway.
You wouldn't have made glasses, would you?
Yeah. He's trying.
He's
joking the whole time. But at the end, it was so creepy having that laugh box, having the laugh go, and you're like, what's the deal? Is this just an overlay? And it does tie in. He does actually have a laugh box on him. Like, still in death.
Still a joke.
Still giving it... Great. That's a great ending for a character. I can't think of a better way.
The whole sequence up there with him up there, and he's dancing around on the ledge, like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! He can easily fall, and he does the whole, let me give you a hand, and all that stuff. It's all just a huge joke.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care.
Yeah, it's fantastic how much... And it's kind of weird, too, to think about his and Vicky's relationship... Because it's somewhat that he's interested in her, but it's still so much crazy. Like, he tries to burn her with the acid.
Right.
He does the dance with her and stuff like that, but then he's, like, willing to just throw her over the side. It's just, I love just everything, his interaction with all the characters throughout that entire sequence.
Yeah.
It's so good. And I kind of agree that the right move was to kill him off at the end. As much as I love Joker.
I don't know how else. I mean, they could have...
You could have run away?
You could have set in an Arkham.
Yeah. Sitting in Arkham, but you haven't established Arkham yet, so it's going to be kind of tough to...
Yeah,
you know, to just throw that out in the movie because regular moviegoers aren't going to know what Arkham is at that point. We all know now,
right.
thanks to other movies,
right.
and the cartoon series and everything else. But it would just been, I don't think it would have given the right closure to have him just be captured at the end.
This movie really is 2 hours of one full story.
Exactly.
Here's everything you need. And I think that's probably partly why it's got the legs that it does. I mean, that's why it made such a splash because It's not setting up for anything else. It's not leaving things, you know, for, oh, we'll save that for later. Here's everything. Here's everything you need. We very intelligently tied it all together.
It wasn't just to start something just to lead into something else. Because so many movies, like you're saying, nowadays, just make the movie to then, okay, well, let's put these seeds in here for the sequel and do this for the sequel and do this for the next one and do this for the cartoon series and do this. And it would just be too much, man. It would just be too much. I think it's the perfect closure, and I'm glad it did.
Me too.
There were big rumors afterwards about how he would come back.
Yeah.
And I remember reading it in like an Inquirer or Star, some tabloid. Because I would read anything between the two that had anything to do with what was going to happen in the next Batman.
Yeah.
There were rumors that Catwoman was going to be in the next one. And she was going to give Joker one of her lives. Because she had 9 lives.
Oh, I'm so glad they didn't do that.
She was going to get Joker on it. It's like, I mean, it's silly. It's tabloid nonsense. There's probably never even a thought. But I was thinking, like, wow, that's not very good. Even when I was young, I was thinking that was not very good. But speaking of those in-between years, I watched the movie constantly on VHS.
Oh, yeah, me too.
We would see movies like one time at the theater, and then we'd get on VHS and watch it a ton of times. Mm-hmm. I watched it a ton of times in between then and there. And, I mean, it was a 3-year period before the next movie. I mean, of course, we started getting information, but everything was kind of cut under wraps. Like, I remember seeing the DeVito drawings and stuff like that as Penguin, and hearing about, oh, Penguin and Catwoman in the next film and all that stuff. But even, like, the toy series kind of kept going.
Yeah, the toys...
Which was awesome.
I think kept it alive, because they were cranking out.
They really just kept it going,
series after series.
When Kenner took over in, like, 1990 with Dark Knight Collection,
that's right.
They just kept it rolling all the way into Batman Returns. It was like there was never anything off the shelf. And I don't think any of that stuff hit clearance, too. Like, the Dark Knight Collection, yeah. I don't remember any of that stuff hitting really clearance.
Yeah.
And, at the shop, we get stuff in all the time, and I don't remember a lot of clearance tags
and
stuff.
No.
It was just
the momentum was up, and they kept it interesting with lots of different Batman variants. And
it shows you kind of the legs that the film had, that people were still interested in those toys 2 years after the movie was gone.
Yeah.
No toy line that ties into a movie lasts an additional 2 years on the shelf nowadays.
Not now.
That doesn't happen. So the in-between years, it was Batman kind of didn't really go away, because it was just so hyped that the sequel was going to come, and Batman just kind of stayed in everybody's minds, and... on store shelves and in newspapers and magazine articles and stuff like, what's the next Batman? Who's the next villains? And then, of course, they announced that it was going to be Catwoman and Penguin in the next movie. And that kind of set the precedent, too, right there for multiple villains in a sequel.
Yeah. Nate brought that up to me. He beat me to it.
Oh, did he?
I wasn't going to say anything, but he was like...
Well, I just beat him to it because I didn't know he said it.
Yeah, you guys... I'll let you two hash it out.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, he said it last week, and I was like, yeah, I mean... After that, it had to be two villains
in
a movie.
It almost always is.
In almost every superhero movie.
You could kind of look back to Superman 2 in the fact that Zod, Ursa, and Non, the three Kryptonians, in addition to Luthor, amped it up. But at the same time, I think Zod was really the focus of Superman 2. Mm. Ursa and Non are just kind of like his cronies. And Luthor is just kind of there as
Luthor's almost always there, as a plot device for like almost a background. I mean, he's going to be there.
Yeah.
But this was different.
Totally different.
Because they're telling two origin stories, basically, of two different characters, and they're both main villains. You also had Max Schreck in here.
Yeah.
Who was...
I would consider him a main villain in the film, too.
Yeah, he's a main villain. But not in such an eccentric way. You know, he wasn't an old Batman villain, so...
Yeah.
But once again, the three were juggled... very well and handled well.
I don't think it's been handled as well since.
No, I would agree with that.
I mean,
I can't think of one.
If you think of, like, Spider-Man 2 doesn't really... It kind of bucks that trend a little bit in that all you have really is Doc Ock, and you've got kind of maybe the beginnings of Harry becoming a villain. But then Spider-Man 3 then pulls
Spider-Man,
the same.
The first one was just
Spider-Man
Green Goblin,
was just Green Goblin, and Spider-Man 2 was just Doc Ock. So it kind of bucks the trend, but it seems like most comic book sequels trying to amp up the villains and add more and more with the sequels. Mm-hmm. And Batman itself just kept getting more ridiculous as it went along. I mean, Batman Forever, we added in Two-Face and Riddler and the Robin storyline. And then Batman and Robin had Poison Ivy, Mr. Freeze, Batgirl, and Bane.
And Bane, yeah.
All added on top of what they already had with Batman and Robin. It was more and more and more each time.
Yeah.
And sometimes that does not work.
And Coolio.
This time it worked.
Yes.
I think that they kind of wove everything together so well between Catwoman's origin and Penguin's origin, and I didn't feel like either one was slighted in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, I didn't either. And that's the funny thing about good storytelling, and the animated series is like this, and we're not going to get too much, but so much. You get so much information in the same amount of time that you have other movies. Why? I don't know why they can't do it now. And I really can't put my finger on it. Why they can't seem to pull off. Everything seems so rushed, and characters get slighted.
I rewatched this the other night, Batman Returns, and I was really just amazed by the Penguin storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've loved this movie since it came out. I really have. But I think more the focus for me is for a long time has been the Catwoman-Batman dynamic.
Yes.
And, I like Penguin. I love the DeVito Penguin. I think he's perfectly cast. He's amazing as Penguin.
Yes, he was great.
But I'm just amazed by his arc of his storyline throughout that. I mean, you see him as a child. Mm-hmm. He's abandoned, which is horrible because he's disfigured. And I mean, that opening sequence before the credits even roll, where he's born, they realize he's disfigured and want to get rid of him. They take him out and they just chuck him out in like a river, yeah, a stream, yeah. You know, to go down into the sewers. That's their child and they just chuck him away. And so it's just, and then you watch that arc as he, you know, then he's obviously been plotting and things like that, and he comes back, and then it's almost like he wants to join humanity again, and then gets kind of pulled back and wants to go back to being this creature again. And then up to his death. I mean, it was just, it's an amazing story arc for that character.
Yeah.
And it's just woven into a movie that also features Catwoman's entire origin, and Batman's in there, and Max Schreck's in there. I mean, this whole Penguin storyline could be a movie just by itself with none of these other characters even involved. It's that well done.
Yeah, pretty much. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah.
You won't even need Batman. You can just pull Batman out of that entirely. You can pull Catwoman out of that entirely, and it's still a solid movie.
Penguin's got enough. He does have enough going on. I mean, you got to think he survives. He kind of gets in with the circus because he's a freak, and he's got this entire history, which kind of leads up to. He's a sad character. He wants, to fit in. He wants to go back to society, or he thinks he does, but he just can't handle the inevitable rejection that he meets. And he just flips out and just accepts, you know, what he's had as being.
Well, he's obviously a selfish character, but he's had so much taken away that it's like, okay, is he justified in kind of being this crazy selfish and wanting to punish everybody else? Because I mean, he's been given a bum rap. I mean, he's born in this body, abandoned by his parents, lives in a sewer, all these different things, and it's like, man, this guy's kind of had it kind of hard.
Yeah.
And you know, he's just been down there all that time, just festering, thinking about these things and making this plot and these schemes and finding Fred's hand and all that stuff that he's been doing down there.
Fred's
all
hand.
All as this bid to then, you know, either become something and rejoin humanity or punish humanity. And it's going to go either way. He's plotting both ways because he's looking up the names of the firstborn sons to get his list going to kill all these people.
Right.
Or he's going to become mayor. It's going to be one or the other. He's either going to rejoin humanity and be at the top and get back everything he was taken from him, or he's going to take everything away from everybody else.
Right.
I think it's awesome.
It's pretty,
that has played out with that character.
I really hadn't thought about that. But.
Very cool character. Great design, too.
Yeah, they found a way to pull that off. You know, make him...
He's scary.
He's
creepy,
he's scary. He's a scary, creepy...
Man. You take a character that's kind of a joke look of the Penguin.
Yeah.
I love classic Penguin.
I do, too.
But it's not going to fit a Tim Burton movie, that design. But you turn it into what it is, and it's this disfigured Penguin man. And you put it in that film, and even though it's changed a lot, he played it in such a way that you can still recognize it totally as the Penguin, the classic Penguin.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing all the wah, 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 and all that stuff and the attitude and things like that. It's all still there, and the look has just changed, but the look works, and just it's just like a complete character.
Yeah.
I love the Penguin. I was talking
to
Jeff.
You love the Penguin.
I love him. Remember Jeff? You know, Jeff Bentzel?
Oh,
yeah. He was saying that and we were talking about Jack Nicholson as Joker and stuff, and he was saying that he prefers DeVito as Penguin to Jack as Joker.
Oh, wow.
And I could see people saying that. You know, DeVito is perfect as Penguin.
Yeah.
He's perfect. And again, that's another one that incredibly enjoyed being that character. Just like Jack enjoyed being the Joker, DeVito loved being the Penguin.
Yeah.
It would just sit in that makeup and get into that character and just stay in that character.
Yeah.
And still talks about it to this day how much he loved just doing it. Being in that suit and that makeup and working it and being the Penguin. And it shows in the character and the portrayal when somebody actually enjoys what they're doing.
It does.
You know?
The Penguin didn't get a figure that year.
Yeah.
He did get a figure, but Danny DeVito's Penguin didn't get a figure.
Not
it was
at all.
It was a Superpowers.
Superpowers repaint.
Repaint.
Which I was super disappointed by as a kid.
I was too.
Let's talk about this merchandise.
I love that figure.
Bit. Yeah.
And cool. I love the new paint. I love the new paint scheme, but I didn't understand it.
Before we jump into the scene that's coming up, since we're talking about merchandising, I want to touch on this a little bit. I think the reason that we didn't get that has a lot to do with the McDonald's thing. Well, originally that Penguin was slated for what was going to be Dark Knight Collection Series 3, a repaint of the Penguin. And then it was, you know, before Batman Returns was even going to start up.
Mm.
And that's when the Penguin design was under wraps.
I see.
They weren't showing the Penguin design, so I guess Kenner had to do something. So they did that Penguin as part of what was going to be Series 3 Dark Knight Collection, but then became the first wave of Batman Returns. So that kind of explains why they would have had to put that figure out, because they didn't work hand-in-hand with the studio back then as to what the designs were and what the character's going to be. I and a friend of mine, we were talking about this the other day, we think that that Batman animated Penguin from the first wave was a retool of what was maybe going to be the DeVito Returns Penguin. Because you see there's like lines on his pants.
Yeah.
And he's sort of a more detailed sculpt than a lot of the other animated stuff would have been. So I could have seen them doing that, especially since the movie dictated that the Penguin look like that in Batman Animated.
Right.
Which Bruce Timm was not happy about.
Yeah.
But they had to do that to match the movie. Because Batman Returns, obviously, or Batman Animated Series spun out of Batman Returns. You know, that kind of led into the Batman animated series starting. So that kind of is why that happened. But the whole merchandising thing, McDonald's did those Happy Meal toys. And there was a huge backlash over parents, you know, oh my goodness, we got these Happy Meal toys and this movie's so dark and it's terrible. He's trying to kill people. And there was a huge hubbub about that. And so that's when merchandising and Batman had to become more hand-in-hand. Warner Brothers then decided, oh, our licensees are mad because you made such a dark movie where this guy's going to kill people. We can't do that. Mm. So that's why the next movies had to work hand-in-hand with their merchandising and had to become lighter and cheerier.
That's awful.
And which is terrible. So the merchandising then after this film started dictating more the tone of the film.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we see a lighter Batman Forever, an incredibly light Batman and Robin, because at that point...
It's light in the loafers.
Oh, my goodness. At that point, Kenner is tied hand-in-hand with the producers make Batman and Robin. It's just a toy commercial.
As a matter of fact, I think Kenner people wrote the script for that one.
They might have. They might have. I mean, they were dictating everything.
Yeah.
It was like, we need these designs right now, so we're going to help you with these designs, and we want this ice hammer vehicle in there and all this different shit. Oh, stuff. I said one. I said...
I will edit that.
Edit that out.
I'll take care of that.
You see how much I dislike Batman and Robin? I slipped a four-letter word in there.
Cut the whole thing out.
Stuff.
Okay.
Stuff, whoops. I mean to say.
It was bound to happen, I think. Didn't it happen once before?
I think it did, and it was me, I think, the last time again, too.
Well, that's all right.
Okay, so there was all that. What do we need to talk about else on Batman Returns?
We're going to talk about this.
The scene.
The scene coming up here.
Go ahead and hit play. Let's hit play.
Well, you've got the DVD.
Yeah.
All right. So Bruce Wayne is sitting in the mansion with the lights off.
Yeah.
And he's contemplating, he's thinking, but he's also sitting in his room where he's got the reflectors for the bat signal. You feel like his whole life is... just waiting for this moment.
Exactly.
And there's a quote in... there's a movie, Le Mans, starring Steve McQueen. It's a racing movie. And he says that... to people who are good at racing... You know... Dagon, I forgot it now. People who are good at racing... Racing is life. To people who are good at it, racing is life. Everything else is just waiting. And that's...
That's what he is.
And that's what it is.
And that's the whole... You know, it spins out of the whole Vicky thing, too.
Right.
Is that's his life. That's all it is. It's just biding his time until he's Batman again.
Yeah.
Or until he needs to be Batman again.
Right.
He has to do things as Bruce Wayne. You know, he has to go out and run the company. And but when it's not time to be Batman, he's waiting to be Batman.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just got to be at the ready for when something happens. So I really liked that. I loved that scene.
I like the way it's lit, too.
It's great.
It really shows off his features. And once again, the bat mask... And his face, like his real face, are...
It's like an extension of it.
It really is.
So he comes into Gotham, and he's taking out the Red Triangle Circus Gang, you know, and he's got the Batmobile's got the new...
I love all the new gadgets.
I love it, man.
Because they're not over the top. They're not, like, crazy...
It's like a shinier black this time around, which kind of matches the whole tone of the film, where, you know, it's a different design. I'm not as crazy about Gotham in this as I am in 89 Batman.
I agree.
But it definitely is. You can definitely see more of a Tim Burton-y type look to everything.
Yeah, I always thought this was really more Tim Burton than the first movie.
Which is how they got him to come back. They said, okay, well, what about this time? What about if you do like a Tim Burton movie instead of, you know, the Batman movie? And, you know, they have two totally different feels, and I love them both.
This is an adequate sequel, though. I agree. I feel like they complement each other very well, and this one doesn't go overboard.
I think we talked about a little bit before. But what do you think about the changes to the return suit?
Actually, this is my favorite suit.
It's a great suit.
Because a lot of things are very... It's pretty much the same suit as the first movie, except he's got those scalloped abs, and it just looks so cool. It's such a subtle change. It's so subtle, but it's so awesome.
The suit is shinier now, too. It's not like as flat and almost like a dingy look as it was before. I like it that it's an evolution. You know, the first suit is his first suit.
Right.
The first movie is his first suit. And he would have tweaked the design and bettered it, you know, as things went on to get to this, which is obviously a better moving suit.
Right.
You know, he doesn't have to... I don't know the right words to say here, but it's definitely that he's amped up the design from the first one.
Yeah.
And I like that, the fact that it's different.
Yeah. You know, he's not sleeping on it. He's made some improvements.
And there's more of him this time, too. He basically had the one suit in the vault before.
Right.
It was his prototype suit, basically. And now he's perfected the design, and there's a lot of different suits inside his armory or whatever.
I love where he shoots the wall with the arrow, with the harpoon, and...
Pulls it.
It just looks so cool.
It's great.
It's a great gag. I love it when he burns the fire breather, too.
Oh, that's fantastic. With the exhaust.
It's like...
Again,
it's like, oh,
he's killing.
You want to breathe fire, okay.
Yeah. It's early Batman career. He's killing... That's just the way it is.
That's the way it goes, you know.
Nobody can say that, it's an unfair take on Batman, because this is how Batman started. So anybody that comes in and says, Batman shouldn't kill, Batman shouldn't this, it's a totally unrealistic view of Batman.
The tone of this, too, is not like, you don't think about it.
Exactly.
You don't think about, he just killed that person. You just think, that was funny, because he did that thing.
The same with, like, where he puts the bomb.
Right, he puts the dynamite down in his pants,
And it's like a little tiny explosion, and there's, like, almost like confetti flying out.
Right,
so it's
Batman's walking
away. So kind of tongue-in-cheek that you won't really think about, he just killed that guy.
But Michael Keaton plays it so cool. Once again, his performance is so perfect that you don't, you never watch this and think, this is campy. That's totally campy. What happened is a campy thing. That's a Adam West type scenario, but it doesn't come across that way at all. Not at all.
I wanted to talk about his interaction there with Commissioner Gordon, too, real quick.
Mm.
Like, he comes in and says, thanks for saving the day again, Batman, or something. So it alludes to the fact that he hasn't been just resting this whole time.
Right.
He's been, active, and he's started to form a relationship with the commissioner and with the mayor and things like that. He's no longer just hidden away, and Commissioner Gordon's looking at him like, oh my God, that kind of thing. They've obviously seen him a few times now. They've interacted with him. He's building the relationship with the commissioner, at least, that, we've seen in the comics, where they work together. And I like that a lot, that it kind of, not without saying, without spelling it out for you, that he's been at it since the last movie.
Right.
And things have improved with his relationship with Commissioner Gordon, and not to the point where he's deputized or working hand in hand, or that criminals don't fear him anymore, but to the point where it facilitates his work.
Yep.
Max Schreck, let's talk about, since Schreck's on the screen right now.
First time I ever saw
Christopher
Walken in anything.
It's the first time I can remember him standing out to me. My dad knew him, because my dad and I went and saw this. This is one of the ones. This one started the thing with me and my dad. That if I see a Batman movie at the theater, I see it with my dad the first time. So my dad and I have gone to see all these movies, but this one we saw first showing first day. I was like, I am not waiting. It's got to happen. right off the bat. And he's like, dude, I know how much it means to you. We'll do it. And so we did that. And my dad knew Christopher Walken, and he was saying, Christopher Walken's in this. That's awesome. I love Christopher Walken. And I didn't really know much about Christopher Walken at that point. But I loved him in this.
Yes.
I loved his delivery. I love his voice. I love everything about his character.
Very odd.
It's very odd.
I mean, he's kind of an odd dude.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I didn't know what to make of it as a kid, but I mean, I loved it.
Like I said before, this character was originally going to be for everything that's been talked about over the years, was originally going to be Harvey Dent. There was also a plot line where he was going to be the older brother of Penguin that had left the Cobblepots later on after he found out what they did to his brother.
Oh.
And went off on his own and changed his name and was on his own thing. And that got dropped from the script, which is, again, an element you didn't need.
Yeah, you didn't
need
it.
It's too much. And his character was going to appear in Batman Animated Series and got shifted to Roland Daggett. Was the character.
Roland Daggett.
Roland Daggett in the cartoon. It was originally Max Schreck in the cartoons, but obviously Schreck doesn't survive this film.
Right. They still could have done it. I mean, it doesn't have to correlate.
Doesn't have to correlate entirely.
So, yeah, I love, I like the Max Schreck character. I don't think it's too much. Because visually, he doesn't come off as a villain. It's not visually overpowering. You already have two freaks. You have Penguin, and then you have Catwoman in leather, and you have Batman too. And he's a business guy.
Yeah.
Shrewd.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know. And really, even though he is he's the real villain.
I was just about to say that. You've got these two characters. The Catwoman is a villain, you know, everybody thinks of as a villain.
Right.
And you've got Penguin that everybody thinks of as a villain. But the most villainous character in this piece is Max Schreck.
He's screwing the whole city. Doesn't look like a villain. He's screwing the whole city, yeah. Like, over and
he
over again.
He creates Catwoman. He's going to put Penguin as mayor and do these horrible things just to, you know, facilitate himself.
Right.
And then abandons him when things don't turn out right.
Right.
And then just goes to a party that night and doesn't even care. He's just like, yeah, I'm just going to go to the party. And Bruce even converts him, you almost made a monster, the mayor of Gotham City. He's like, yawn, or something like that. He doesn't even care.
Yeah.
He is the monster of this film. And he's the one that doesn't look like a monster.
I'm sure that is intentional.
Oh, definitely.
As far as
yeah.
Burt
Ward.
Burt Ward is concerned.
Robin in the 60s. Yep. Yeah, it's the only thing he was concerned with this movie.
What's his name?
Tim Burton.
Yeah. I don't know what I can think of it. You flush it, I flaunt it.
I can't get over his look, man. Perfect makeup, too.
Great makeup.
I don't even think about it being makeup after a while.
Right.
I accept him as that's how he looks. It doesn't come across as makeup-y.
It doesn't, and I think they really took his natural features and just exaggerated.
They even talk about that in the special features.
Oh, really?
Like, they studied his pores and his bone structure.
Oh, wow.
And just elongated that in the makeup. And again, this is kind of a lost art form for the most part. This character probably would have been CGI nowadays. You know, for to have such a grotesque, weird look, they would have just gone, well, you know, it's too tough to do it as this or too tough to do it as that. But this is a real art. I mean, he is a piece of art, that character is.
He's gross.
I want to talk about, I know it's not during this scene, but I don't know what time we're at right now. So
we got about, it's 41 minutes right now.
Okay.
So.
I really enjoy the scene, and this kind of plays into how he is in the city now. Him just slowly driving through the city in the Batmobile.
Yes.
And the crunch of the snow under the tires. And, you know, people aren't rushing out.
Patrolling.
To say, oh, hi, Batman.
Right.
You know, it's like the 60s series if Batman's driving the city. Oh, Batman, hey, right. Batman. Nobody is like, it's like nobody's on the streets. They are basically, I would think, are seeing the Batmobile coming in and are like, oh, boy.
Well, Batman is a loner.
Yeah.
You know, and it points that out.
And he doesn't trust. He doesn't trust Penguin.
Right.
He's like the only guy. Even Alfred seems like he almost trusts the Penguin. Are you, you know, still concerned about that poor Penguin fellow or something like that?
It's vicious.
He doesn't know.
Yeah.
He doesn't trust at all. Batman is just like, I know there's something else.
Yeah, he's got a...
Yeah.
He's got a suspicion. All right, so Catwoman's entering now. Michelle Pfeiffer...
Here's where I might get in some trouble.
Okay, just let me do the talking. I mean, daggone.
I gotta say it. I mean, when I was a kid, this is all it was.
Before this, I think it was before the movie came out. I got the poster. I told you the story.
Yeah.
I brought home the posters, and you know, poster. They were like 15 or 20 bucks, I think. I bring it home. My uncle's sitting on the couch, and he goes. What do you got there? And, you know, told him some posters. He said, how much do they cost? And I told him, and he goes, for 15 bucks, you better do a lot more than hang on your wall. And I was just like, okay, Batman is awesome. I don't know. I don't fully get it, but I got it. After I saw the movie, I was like, I wish you'd do more than hang on my wall. I don't.
Yeah, man, you talk about things I can remember from my childhood, like actor and actress or actor actress crushes that I would have.
Actor crushes
I had none, but actress crushes, this one stands out. It was just like her as Catwoman. I had the hugest crush, man. I was just over the moon.
I still do.
I would say the top female character in film ever for me.
Wow.
I mean, I would go that far to say that.
I'm not gonna say it right now, but you might be onto something. She's got a little
that's
mystery
great.
Too.
I'm sweating here.
Don't sweat.
I'm sweating it.
I mean, Michelle Pfeiffer's a gorgeous. She's a beautiful woman to this day.
Yeah, she hasn't really aged.
No,
at all.
Not almost.
It's
not
crazy.
How did Fisher Stevens get her? I don't know.
I don't understand that.
I don't get it.
Fisher Stevens?
Fisher Stevens.
Oh, my. And he squandered it. He cheated on her or something.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Fisher Stevens?
Fisher, you're an
idiot.
You're
never going to get anything better, Fisher Stevens.
No, you can't move up.
What are you doing? Call me Fisher Stevens.
Call me the plague. It's from Hackers. Anyway.
Hard copy.
Back to the topic at hand.
Okay.
When she first appears in the catsuit,
It's astounding. It's a perfect design.
And yeah, and I'm beside myself. I don't know what to say. But her transformation of the way she acts, you know, she's a little unlocked. Everything is like unlocked at that moment where she helps them. And I like the hello there sign.
Sure, where they the O and
the O and the T, and it's hell here, and that's clever. It's just a little thing. It's kind of a quick thing in the movie, but I love the character. I love the dynamic between her and Batman, which to me, once again, as a kid, this is before animated series or anything. This is kind of my reference point for Catwoman and Batman. But I love the play back and forth. I love that they're on opposite sides, but they still have this unbridled chemistry. Like, what are they going to do with it? They're both loners. They're both out and misunderstood, maybe. And it's just played perfectly by both of them. And there's no way that there will ever make another movie where it's played better than that.
I agree.
To me, I mean, for these two characters, totally. I can't see it.
And some people, you know, argue the fact that, oh well, she's not really Catwoman because she doesn't do the cat burglar thing.
That's
ridiculous. That's a ridiculous notion because that's not the core of the Catwoman character to me.
It's not. She does that just to kind of keep things going or maybe for some excitement,
yeah,
maybe.
I mean, and who knows? I mean, she obviously is left hanging at the end of this film. You know, we know that the character's still out there. Who knows if that doesn't become part of her character later
exactly.
on?
Exactly.
We're seeing the origin of the character.
This is a thing right this minute.
Seeing 2 hours of this character, basically. So, you know, how much do you want them to cram in before it becomes too much? How could you have worked the cat burglar aspect into the storyline and have it make sense and not feel like just fluff that's been added on there?
Yeah.
To me, they got the core of it. You know, the look of the character, the attitude of the character, her relationship to Batman, all those things to me are more important in Catwoman than me seeing her steal some jewels.
Exactly.
Steal some jewels from later on.
Sure, you could throw that in later, but...
Yeah.
Also, dang it, what was I going to say? Let's see, we're talking about burglary and Catwoman.
Yeah.
Oh, I like how... They kind of make it at first like she's almost going out to become a crime fighter. She stops that dude. I mean, and I think she just doesn't want to see women get, you know, pushed around anymore, and she's tired of it, of course. But she's heading out, and it's this, I don't know, it's just a cool little aspect. Because she does a good thing. That first deed that she does as Catwoman is a good thing.
Exactly.
And if you really want to look at it, taking out all of Shrek's stores and stuff, that's a good thing, too, because like we talked about...
Shrek's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy. He's the monster. He's the real villain here. And she...
This sequence is creepy.
This is a creepy sequence with the cats.
And they're on her mouth.
This is maybe the only problem that I really have.
See, I like this.
And it's such a small thing, but you don't get nibbled on by cats and then, like...
See, I think it was like, just imagery. I don't think that it was so much that it brought her back. I think the awnings are what saved her.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's just kind of, like, out cold right now, and this is just kind of waking her up. I love the eye flutter thing she does.
Yes.
Where it's fluttering and it's just open. It's creepy, man. Well,
it is. She's got great eyes for one. But she has a... when she tears up later, she's dancing with Bruce. Well, they're playing the Susie and the Banshee song, by the way. I was a big Susie fan for a little while.
Used to be.
I used to be.
Still are.
No, I don't listen to that much anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
That's sad to hear.
Well, sorry.
I really like that face-to-face song.
It's a great song. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I like the songs that I like.
That's creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy. How'd she do that?
See, and in the commentary, he's even talked about that. He's like, well, I wanted to do this scene. That you can look at it both ways. If you want to think of it as there's some kind of supernatural element going on with these cats, that's fine. If you don't want to think of it that way, and you just want to say it's just imagery, and, you know, it's just her waking up, and all these cats are around or whatever,
I'm going
to
go with that.
That's fine, too. Yeah, that's the great thing about these films, is that you can read into it what you want to read into it, and it's not fully spelled out for you. It's like, okay, if you want to take it that way, take it that way. If you don't want to take it that way, don't take it that way.
Like all the good ones.
And now she's completely changed.
She's totally changed.
A totally different character here.
And she makes a lot of little symbolic changes here. She starts stuffing the stuffed animals down the...
With the knife. Down, crazy.
Down in the disposal. She didn't run any water on her. She should have ran some water.
No, she didn't. She's drinking straight out of the carton, which grosses me out.
That grosses me out too. You know what? She's dripping milk on her chin. I don't like that. I don't like people getting milk on themselves.
Ugh,
that's kind of gross to me.
I gotta admit something. I don't even like just drinking milk straight up.
I don't either. I don't do it.
It kind of grosses me out a little bit.
Yep.
I most of the time will eat my cereal just dry. Because I don't really like milk that much.
Almond milk. Yeah,
I like strawberry milk and things like that, and vanilla milk and banana milk. But yeah, drinking milk straight out of the carton is gross. But so that tells you right there that she's lost it. She's drinking milk out of the carton.
Right. That's the biggest symbol right there.
She drank milk out of the carton. She's got to be crazy.
And that's a little cat thing that is not like, oh, now she's a cat.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not in your face. It's just a tiny thing that a normal person could do, too. And she must have had a big coat because she makes the entire suit.
Well, you go from a big bulky coat to something that's right on your skin.
Skin tight.
Plus the boots aren't part of the coat.
That's true.
And the corset piece isn't part of the coat.
That is true.
So, and the gloves aren't part of the coat. So you don't have to worry about it.
Okay, I'm not worried.
Yeah, don't worry
about it. I'm not worried.
Don't worry about that
anymore. I'm not worried about
okay?
it.
Okay. I want to touch on real quick here. I don't know how much time we're at here.
We've got 50. We're at 50 minutes. So.
Okay, so we should probably wrap it up pretty soon.
Get close.
Is there anything in particular that you wanted to address in the film that we hadn't gotten to yet?
For me, Penguin is great, but for me, it was always about Catwoman and Batman. And the wintry, the Christmas feel. I know you said this was released in, what, June?
Released in June, yeah.
But it's such a Christmas movie to me. It's,
totally.
That's when I want to watch it, and yeah.
It starts off at Christmas, and it ends with Christmas. It's kind of Christmas when they drop off Cobblepot, and it's...
There's snow on
Alfred
the ground.
Wishing Merry Christmas at the end.
That is more of a Tim Burton-esque element, totally. Element anyway. That's...
Oh, it definitely feels like a Christmas movie. It's something you can watch at Christmas and, you know, break up the other holiday films. For the years, it was kind of tough for me to, you know, when people ask, what are your favorite superhero films? I would have such a hard time just saying Batman and not saying Batman Returns with it, because I almost like grouped them together, and it was just, I almost don't want to give this, you
they
know,
are booking, yeah, I mean, they go together.
It's so tough to separate this one for me in my mind, because I love them both so much. I know they're two different things. It's just really hard for me where to put it. And I wouldn't put it above 89 Batman.
No.
And I wouldn't say it's equal to 89 Batman, but it's just kind of like...
It fits.
It just fits, and it's a different thing, and I love it. I love this film. I loved it so much when it came out, and I couldn't wait for the VHS, and I watched it again and again. I watched them both again and again, and I love them. I think they're great films.
I think of Alien and Aliens being the same way, where...
Great analogy. That's perfect.
Alien is the more serious, more down-to-earth, more rooted, different movie. It's a different movie. And then the second one complements it perfectly, but it's a little bit further. It's a little... It's not lighter, but it's... I don't know. It's a little bit more extravagant. They let loose just a little bit more, and that's how I always see these two. But they're perfect together. You can't separate them.
I wanted to talk about that Robin figure for Batman Returns. I don't want to end on this.
Okay,
well... The Batman Robin figure for Batman Returns, but I do want to say it real quick.
Yeah.
I love that Robin for Batman Returns.
I love that Robin, too.
Back in the time where you didn't know what was coming out in stores...
Yep.
Until sometimes you saw it at the store. I saw it in a Toys R Us sales ad. Riding the Robin jet foil and just freaking out about the figure and getting that figure. I knew he wasn't going to be in the movie.
Right.
But I loved the fact that they took that new costume and shoved it into that Batman Returns line.
I did too.
Great job, Kenner. I still love that figure so much to this day. It's like one of my favorite figures of all time.
Yeah.
Perfectly made figure. He's got a flat top. Yeah, who cares? The rest of him is perfect. But how would you think that Robin could have worked in this film?
I don't know that he could have.
I agree. I don't think he could have worked, and I'm glad they left him out.
Yeah.
Because, again, the discussion, just like the first movie happened, do we put Robin in here?
It's too many things.
And it ended pretty quickly, thankfully, because you can't shoehorn Robin into here.
I know it's Batman and Robin, but I almost never think of... Outside of the campiness, well, there's, like, Hush, you know, like that... some of the comic stuff is fine, but I think of Batman as being on his own, probably because of these two films... You can't put Robin into with the
not,
two
no,
villains,
it's too much.
Three villains. Really.
You see how well it works in Batman Forever. It doesn't work as well.
It really doesn't. And there's nothing wrong with Chris O'Donnell being Robin. And that suit is awesome. I think it's great.
It was obviously inspired by that comic,
yes.
Tim Drake suit. But somebody is going to get slighted when you work that many characters in. And Two-Face got slighted in that film.
Not only that, but he's got to have red and green. And I think for the tone of this film and the first one, how do you do it? I don't. I mean, they muted the colors in the third one, but it's still, I'm glad they left him out.
Me too. I'm so glad that Kenner got him into the line, because then I had a great Robin to interact with Iron Witch Batman.
Yes.
But at the same time, I'm so glad he was not in the movie. It just wouldn't have worked. And so many things work great in this film that adding in that piece might have made the whole thing fall apart. You know?
Yes. I love... one of my favorite parts is... I loved at the end where he's playing the recording of the Penguin, and then he scratches it.
Oh, yeah, I love that!
Because rap had just, like, gotten into the mainstream at that point, and so it was just, like, it was stupid, but...
I love that scene, too.
Yeah, but it always made me laugh.
I love when Catwoman and Penguin are on the balcony thing. I thought you were just going to scare the Ice Princess. She looked pretty scared to me. And he looks over the side. They just killed her. You know, yeah. And it's... He thinks it's funny, you know? Yeah, he's a mean character.
He had a little joke
about it.
One of my favorite parts is... Well, it's another Catwoman one, but she blows... She flips... She's doing all the back handsprings out of Shrek's place, out of the store. And when she gets to Batman and Penguin... Batman and Penguin are just, like, standing there. Like two guys. Like, seriously... It doesn't matter what's going on with a couple of guys.
You see that.
They're at odds. They're getting ready to fight. And here she comes, and they're both just like, hey, what do you think? I mean, you could almost see one nudging the other.
And Penguin claims her. He's like, I saw her first.
I saw her first. But I love her before she gets there, and it wasn't like she's breathing real heavy because she just did all those back handsprings, and then the meow just before the explosion was...
There's a lot in here. There's a lot of great scenes of characters together. Yeah. The whole interaction between him and Penguin before that happens, and Batman's just like whispering type talk to him, and you know, saying, where he's saying the whole, well, you don't really think you'll win, do you? And he's things change. He says it back to him. It's just such good interaction between characters. And it's not a moment where somebody's screaming or they're fighting right off the bat.
Right.
It's just great interaction between two characters, right. And that's sorely missing a lot of films nowadays. I like the Batmobile out of control and turning into the Bat-missile.
That was a surprise.
Awesome.
That was a surprise. You were like, what?
You're like, look at the Batmobile can do. And then at the she's shown back in the Batcave having to try and fix it on his own. Like, he's working on the Batmobile himself.
That's another scene in this movie that I think they touched on in one of the documentaries, but where he's, after he gets stabbed, clawed by her, and he's back in the Batcave, and he's just sitting there, and he pulls off a glove, and he's just sitting like a regular dude, and he gets on the phone. He's in his Batsuit still.
Can
you bring me some antiseptic?
Yeah. It's great.
He's on the phone, but it kind of ties in his reality and the reality of just doing a job, really, with the mythic proportions of Batman. This is great. There's a lot of... there's more moments that we're not going to get to in this.
We're going to have to wrap it up here in a second. But I wish more people... I hear a lot of people say, oh, I don't know, that Batman Returns is silly. It's ridiculous. I think this is a dark film. You know, there are light moments sprinkled in, but it's a really dark story, and it's a dark film.
Oh, definitely.
And it really needs... If you don't like Batman Returns, and you don't think it's, you know, that one's silly with the Penguin and stuff, rewatch this film, man. It holds up. In my opinion, a great, solid storyline. Even just if you just pay attention to just Penguin, you could see the darkness and the seriousness of the storyline. Batman Returns...
Yeah.
Great film. And spawned Batman Animated Series, which is obviously...
A great cartoon.
A great cartoon.
We will get to that.
It kept Batman around and in the public eye, and unfortunately led to other things, too, like Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, which we will not do podcasts on.
We will not do those.
I can tell you flat out, Batman Forever, the only thing I really like about it is the Riddler.
Me too.
Chris O'Donnell Robin's okay.
It's okay.
Batman and Robin, there is nothing to like about it.
There's nothing in it.
There's nothing to like about it at all.
Here we go.
Here we go.
There's that to like.
There's that scene, which you've mentioned before. Here we go. Here's that scene where he's driving up the Batmobile in the crunch of that snow.
Here's the thing, too. It's the Batmobile is a fast car.
Yeah.
Okay, and you know it's fast, and you're used to seeing it fast. And here it is just kind of cruising a little bit. You know it's got guts under the hood, but it's...
He's just patrolling.
He's not...
Ugh. I seriously could talk about these films for hours and hours and hours and never get tired of talking about them.
Yep.
You know, I really can't get enough of these two movies. They mean so much to me. named one of our kids Keaton after this, in case anybody on the podcast doesn't know that.
Yeah.
One of me and Bobby's kids is named Keaton. Keaton Christopher. Keaton for this. Christopher Christopher Reeve.
Christopher Nolan.
No, not at all. Nice try. These films mean a lot to me. You know, they definitely stand the test of time.
Totally.
All right, so I think that's good. I think that's a good stopping point. We've done another hour of Keaton Batman talk.
So next time will not be Batman.
It'll not be Batman.
We do have an animated series episode in the near future, but not next time.
Next time around, I'll have seen Iron Man 3. You might have seen Iron Man
3. I might have. Yeah, we'll probably have an update.
Some and maybe some other update type of things.
Some other stories and whatnot. Yes.
Toys and comic books and the cartoons like. And the like.
Yes.
Thanks everybody that sent forth questions and for listening for these two parts. If you got to this through 1989batman.com, which I posted it on there, go over to actionfeatures.net to check out our other stuff, other podcasts, things like that. If you got this through actionfeatures.net and you want to talk about more Batman stuff and see more Batman stuff, go to 1989batman.com. They're hand in hand, those two sites there.
Yes.
Kissing cousins.
Kissing cousins.
Those two. Which is gross, if you think about it.
Yeah, let's not do that. It's a gross thing. They're good friends, and they're holding hands.
Yeah, they're like an uncle and a nephew that see each other at holidays. And
yep, and they go fishing together.
Yeah, fishing, and then the uncle gets good gifts. They look forward to each other.
All right. All right, Bat fans, until next time, it's Vichy Suave, so it's supposed to be cold.
It's cold. Action features.